It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
KSL's unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Sean O'Connell filling in for Alex and Scott tonight. You can find me, Ben Anderson, on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. You can find Sean O'Connell at Real OC Sports. Sean, it's been a while. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Great to see you.
Hey, we're working. It's good to be working right now.
Yes, it is. It's excellent to be doing something.
We got a big show for you today. I'm sure you do know Sean. If you don't, he played at the University of Utah. He's been a professional fighter. He's still a radio host. So we're going to cover all those things, including actually some very interesting boxing news. That's going to come up before the end of the show. Latest developments with the NBA. Talk a lot of Pac-12 as the radio show you host really revolves around the Pac-12. First, let's get to The Cut, powered by KSL Sports.
The Cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, OC, big story today from CBS Sports, and actually featured an economist from the University of Utah just talking about the effect that this might have on Power 5 conferences and the Group of 5 conferences. Now, if you don't know, and I'm sure you do, there's about 65 schools, including Notre Dame. BYU kind of tips it at 66, however you want to place them. Depends on which.
We'll put them in. We'll put them in.
Yeah, just to say, let's just pretend we're south of 33rd South. We'll put BYU in. They're in Provo. They're a part of it. They're going to be a part of one league, and then the rest of the Group of 5 schools, which unfortunately includes Utah State, Boise State, you know, Fresno State, all these good schools, but not necessarily the heavy hitters in college football. They separate into a different league. And we've talked about this in football for a really long time, the idea that, hey, these best schools are leaving, going in one direction, they make so much money, these lower schools only make a couple million dollars a year, they can't keep up. Is the coronavirus pandemic going to accelerate this and truthfully, finally, kind of split these conferences up?
The thing with this virus is we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be really on any industry or in any part of our lives, but it stands to reason because of some of the things that we're seeing now with professional leagues kind of exploring different possibilities, maybe a different playoff format in the NHL and the NBA could eventually rise out of this. It might be the catalytic event for big changes like this to take place. And a lot of it's going to be economically driven, as you well know, right? If these Group of Five conferences, right? If the non-Power Five schools, and we're not including BYU in that right now.
Correct. Power Five but, school BYU.
Yeah. If everyone else looks at their schedule, looks at their television contracts, looks at all these things and says, man, if the economics of this are compromised for Alabama and for Clemson and for USC, what kind of shape am I going to be in at Boise State? And that's an excellent program. That is one of the best programs in college football. It's just in a geographical location that doesn't have the same kind of resources on any level. And the thing is, though, for Utah State, for Boise State, for Cincinnati, for UCF, some of the heavy hitters kind of in that category, I don't know that it would necessarily be a really bad thing to fully break away from the Power Five schools. And I don't know if that's a hot take or not. I don't know what people – I know that the possibility of an upset over Michigan, if you're Appalachian State, that's now a D1 school,
sure,
that's intriguing every single year. But what's better? Having that possibility every 5 or 10 year cycle and people talk about it for a long time, or you break away, you become the spring football league,
right,
where you don't have competition with the Clemsons of the world, And you're one of the heavier hitters. You're a top 25 school. You're a top 10 school every single year in your new league. Problem is, Ben, as you know, we as consumers, we as sports fans, for whatever reason, football is the one thing we don't want an alternative product.
Right.
It's so weird. We love it, but we love what we know. We don't want anything different.
Here's what's funny. The loudest voices come from the people who cover the biggest teams. And so that's the Paul Feinbaums of the world, the Colin Cowherds of the world, etc. They kind of help set some of these narratives. Now, it's not like they make the rules, but they do help set the narratives. And a lot of them don't want to see these groups break off. Now, not everyone. Of course, there's different conversations and different beliefs along the biggest names. But we do kind of like this story of this Appalachian State that comes along once every 10 years to beat a Michigan, or once every 20 years. And we say, well, no, we don't want to get rid of that. But we're not thinking of, hey, if they don't do that and break away, they might lose six athletic departments. Like, yeah. They might lose six entire programs. The women's soccer team's gone. Men's lacrosse is gone. Softball, baseball, they're gone. And that's 300 kids in scholarships over 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, our life-changing education.
And we're 50 jobs for people that aren't coaches.
But I like Appalachian State once a year. I want to watch them once a year. Oh, and by the way, if it's 14-0, 4 minutes into the first quarter, I'm turning the game off.
That's
right. I've forgotten they've ever played.
That's 100% right. Yeah, and the interesting, I'm glad you brought up kind of the power players in our industry, in the media. I think even like a Colin Cowherd, a Paul Feinbaum, or whatever, if you're talking about the group of five playing at a different time, in a different season, well, then those loyalties, reluctantly, but eventually, would get attached to whoever the power player is in the Spring Football League. And it sets up possibilities for, like, an English football model where you have relegation and you have bumping up, you know, like,
yeah.
That's effectively what happened with Appalachian State, right? They were too good. They got too big.
That's what happened with Utah.
Yes. So, I mean, there's some possibilities. That'd be a lot of fun to watch. Do I think that it's going to happen in the model that, you know, I have in my head? No, because I'm never right about these things. But particularly with the brands that we seem to be most concerned about in Salt Lake City, like Boise State, we're very familiar with, obviously. Utah State would be the one. And look, BYU, we don't know realistically what side of the fence they'd end up falling on. It might not be a bad thing.
I love the idea of a spring football league that is the group of five teams. That is Boise State, Fresno State, Cincinnati, the teams you mentioned that we get to watch year-round. Now, are we going to tune in and watch those games in the spring the way we do when we watch the SEC and we watch Clemson, we watch the Pac-12, we watch the Big Ten? No, we're not. But are you watching those games anyways? On a Saturday when
they're
going up head-to-head against the biggest competitors, are you watching those lower games? You're not. That's why they're kicking off at 8:30 at night.
Yeah.
That's why they're kicking off on networks you can't find. If you could do it where ESPN is covering college football before they have an NBA playoff game, you would love that in April. You would love that if you could get to that point. And you know what? What it does do, and some of the issues that the Group of Five is going to have really now with the NCAA transfer rules are going to start happening where everyone gets a free transfer and can move up and transfer as quickly as they want.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids are going to transfer less if they have a different season to play on their own where they're getting more recognition and then also can't say, hey, I'm going to play in the spring, then I'm going to go play in the fall once again.
Yeah, you'd have to make some rules around all that stuff. And the other thing, the other place where you'd come to kind of a sticking point is with NFL preparation, right? I mean, some of the best players that represent, you know, kind of our sphere in Utah came from Utah State.
Yep.
I mean, Bobby Wagner is the best active player from any of the three schools in the state right now.
Yeah.
And Bobby Wagner, if you rewind time and you change the rules to this, Bobby Wagner doesn't get selected in the normal draft. He's a supplemental draft guy because he was playing spring football. Does that change his trajectory or the, you know, how his career goes? Probably not, because he's that great of a player. But it's something that you would have to take into account. And it's something that the NFL would have to kind of agree to and sign off on, because even though they're not officially linked, everybody knows that the NFL and the NCAA, that's their farm league. That's the developmental league for the NFL. It's college football.
Right.
So they have to sign off.
Here's what I think we are seeing, though, with this push to get players back on campus. And we'll talk about this more coming up in the next segment. This push by the Pac-12, basically everyone across college football, to get players back starting June, mid-June at the latest, get these guys back, they don't want to have to answer those questions yet.
Yeah.
If they can put off answering those questions on what's going to happen with this loss of money, they're going to do that. We'll keep talking about that more coming up next. And even another idea that's popped up for the NBA, how many teams are actually going to come back this season. He's Sean O'Connell. I'm Ben Anderson. This is KSL's Unrivaled. I've old Ben Anderson, Sean O'Connell, filling in for Alex and Scott today. You can find Sean on Twitter at RealOC Sports. Find me at Ben's Hoops. And, of course, you can follow along with the show. Tweet at us at KSL Unrivaled. All right, OC, we've been talking about the latest with the Pac-12, college sports, this push to come back. I have to say, just because of everything that's gone on in the last 2 months, I've totally blanked that we didn't have a March Madness tournament. And the amount of money that has gone from those schools, as we've been talking about, kind of this enormous financial discrepancy that, A, already exists in college football between the haves and the have-nots, or the Power Five conferences and the Group of Five. When you're a college basketball team or a G5 college basketball school, that kind of San Diego State, that relies on that aspect of making the tournament, bringing that money in, losing that for 1 year is just absolutely enormous. Losing that much money, if you lose it again next year, if we don't get college basketball back, you will see programs shut down.
Yeah, for sure. And we actually, on my Pac-12 Today show on SiriusXM, we talked to Larry Krystkowiak about that today. He was on our show today, and he said that, look, I know that everyone was affected by this, but for college basketball, even though we got most of our season done, and the Utes were eliminated from the Pac-12 tournament when they finally shut things down, he said college basketball got hit maybe as hard or harder than anyone else, because the crowning event of the year, the one that brings in all of the money.
Yeah, all of the money.
All of it didn't happen. So you played, you did your thing, you did your job, and you didn't get the payoff at the end. And look, from a player perspective, that's obviously devastating. But from a coach's perspective and from an athletic department's perspective, it kind of sucks that we have to talk about how the economics drive everything. But we saw the NCAA and people were talking about, yeah, there's an insurance policy for this. I think that insurance policy is going to pay $240 million,
yeah,
which is like a quarter of the revenue that actually would have come in. So it's not okay.
We've been talking about an article that came out today at CBSSports.com talking about the financial impact of everything, why schools are coming back, why there does feel like there's this push to come back, and what kind of the impact will be if we don't see it, which is where we're talking about this divide between the Power Five and the Group of Five teams. A Washington University study, according to ESPN, says if football is canceled this summer or this fall, and I don't think it's going to be. I think we're going to get college football, but I think one of the reasons we are going to get it, because if they don't play this year, they're going to lose $4 billion. Again,
that's right.
You may have an enormous insurance policy. No one insured it for $4 billion. There's no insurance company waiting to pay that money out on
that's
the other
right.
end. So you have to come back. And I hate to have this kind of cold conversation about it, because I'm team life over team economy. You know, I'm team life over team money. I want people to live and be healthy and be fine. I don't know how sports, which is what we're talking about, recover if you lose that much money. I don't know how you flatten out to pay salaries ever again.
Yeah, I don't think it will recover. I mean, college athletics as we know it, without this year's NCAA basketball tournament that we just mentioned, and without a college football season, would be decimated. You know, people wouldn't have to argue and moan about Title IX anymore, because there'd be no money for any program. It would just be, sorry guys, thanks for showing up, but we don't have money to pay the coaches. We don't have money to pay for your scholarships, the facility and the delicious menu that you've got up there, nothing to pay for it anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it's coming back. Larry Scott went on record either yesterday or today and said, I'm not concerned that we won't have Pac-12 football. That obviously is music to the ears of people like me whose job depends on the Pac-12.
Absolutely.
It's Utah football fans elated about this, even if it's going to be a compromised product with no fans in the stadium and that kind of thing. But I cannot, Ben, get away from the idea that, all right, we're going to get college football back, but what is it going to look like when inevitably some players, some coaches, some support staff test positive for coronavirus? How is it going to be handled? Adam Silver has said for the NBA, we are not going to bother coming back if we're in a place where one positive test would shut everything down like it did the first time. There's no reason to come back if that's the case. So what is the threshold? I've talked about this. I've tried to have conversations with smarter people than myself about this. What do you think the threshold will be or should be?
I remember a game the Jazz played against the Denver Nuggets earlier this season, and the Nuggets had, I think, 7 players mm-hmm. that were active. So they had their 5 starters, and they had 2 bench guys because they had just made a trade and they had some injuries. So they didn't have everyone active, and somehow they beat the Jazz. Neither here nor there, they beat the Jazz, but they were able to play. I don't actually think you could go an entire postseason or seven games of the regular season and then the postseason with the expectation that, hey, we're going to play even if 40% of the teams are decimated or 40% of each team is decimated.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to be in a really tough spot if you end up with a team where there's an outbreak and say, hey, it was in one locker room and everybody got it and that team can't play. Maybe you can have those guys forfeit their games. Maybe they lose out on the playoffs. Maybe they don't get to keep playing and you advance the other team if you're committed to finishing the season. But that threshold can't be that high for the league to feel comfortable continuing to play. It can't be more than 30%, can it?
I don't know. And there's got to be a difference between professional leagues and amateur leagues, which is what we're talking about with college football, right? Look, if Damian Lillard doesn't want to go play because he can't make this playoff, whatever the format is anyway, yeah, and he's a guy that's making $100 million a year between his endorsements and his salary and all that stuff, why would Brant Keithy be like, yes, I definitely want to go play,
yeah,
and expose myself and my family to whatever risk? Look, I want college football back more than you do listening. I promise you.
Right.
My livelihood depends on it. Yeah. Okay. I want it back more than you do. But I also need there to be a clear and concise protocol so we know what to expect. Here's what you do. I think this is what you do. You test as much as you can, but knowing that college students getting back on campuses are not going to be social distancing, they're not going to be doing extra hand washing, they're not going to be taking precautions and wearing masks. College kids don't do that kind of stuff, right? So when you get a positive test, if it's Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, right, you still have to sequester him, quarantine him, get him away. Treat it like every other coach did with every other injury that's ever existed in college football. You move the drill. You say, sorry, Trevor Lawrence, we'd love to have you back, but you're probably gone for at least 6 weeks. And hopefully you recover and you test negative 3 weeks in a row and we can bring you back. But we cannot afford an outbreak on this team. And that's only one small little like nuance to this whole thing. What happens if it's Trevor Lawrence, his three best receivers, his best running back, and two of the best offensive linemen? Well, that's what Stanford has dealt with injuries the last few years. And we know what that does to a product of great football.
Yep.
Destroys it. So are we willing to watch that? Are you, as a Utah fan, going to give Kyle Whittingham and his coaching staff and everybody a pass if their seven best players have to sit out 4 weeks because of positive COVID tests? It's all stuff that needs to be talked about and thought about.
Do you have junk? Call Junk, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Give them a call, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They make junk disappear, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. The nice thing is about some of these leagues, I don't trust all the leagues. I do trust the NBA, and I'm an NBA guy. I feel close to the league. I love the league. I trust Adam Silver. I believe they have contingency plans, and those contingency plans have contingency plans, and it's a tree that starts with what happens if one guy gets it at the top, and then every plan beyond that will be predetermined ideally as you get back to the season.
Yeah.
And still, here's the problem. We've never hosted an entire postseason at Disney World. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
you,
that's
you
right.
You don't know what you don't know yet. And you're going to run into issues inevitably that you were not expecting regardless of how well you planned. There will have to be a certain amount of luck for this to come back and go smoothly. It can go. I don't know if it can go smoothly. And I think that's what the NBA, what college football, college basketball, if it's able to come back towards the end of the season, the NFL, if it comes back, Major League Baseball, if it ever comes back, they have to be comfortable riding out a really bad situation at some point. And I don't know how you convince the players to do that.
I don't know how you convince coaches and doctors, team doctors, support staff, referees. That's the cohort. Like, look, the numbers that we see, the numbers that we are aware of, tell us that young people are less affected, young healthy people especially, are less affected than folks like, oh, I don't know, Nick Saban, who's 68 years old.
Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are just fine.
They're fine.
They're going to be okay.
Thank the Lord, and hopefully that will be the case with everyone who gets sick in America moving forward. But we know that statistically that's not the case. And I know there's a lot of people out there listening, and they're saying it's less than 1%. All right. But how are you going to react when your favorite coach gets sick? How is the sports viewing world going to react if we didn't know about an underlying medical condition in LeBron James,
yep,
and he's decimated by this. He's floored. It affects him long term, or heaven forbid, kills somebody that we know about, that we value, even though we shouldn't value them over any other human life, but that we value as a pillar of these sporting communities. How are you going to react to it then? You have to know what your reaction is going to be, and are we going to continue?
I don't want to sound cold about this, but think of what the death of Kobe Bryant did when it was unexpected to the league that he was no longer playing in and wasn't a part of.
Yeah.
I mean, it shut down the league for 2 days. Two of the teams couldn't play for a week. He's not active anymore. He wasn't around the teams. So you're right. It's going to have an enormous impact. When we come back, hey, a guy who hasn't fought for a while, Mike Tyson's hearing his name back in the news. You actually got to hang out with Mike Tyson.
I did.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk about why he's making the news again. It's coming up next. KSL's Unrivaled.
Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Sean O'Connell filling in for Alex and Scott tonight. Big thanks to those two for taking an extended holiday, allowing us to jump in the studio. Always fun to talk to Sean, catch up. Sean, you notoriously won the PFL, the first season.
Yeah.
What was it, heavyweight division?
Light heavyweight.
Yeah. Light heavyweight division. So you won, and it looked like a league that was really starting to take off. As somebody who is affiliated, because you also do play-by-play now for the PFL, how do you feel about the league? What's this been like, kind of been on the front lines that the league is actually going to be shut down this year? They were supposed to start last week.
Yeah, no, it's been great to be part of the league. They're really making a concerted effort to change the model of the industry. The UFC, as a lot of people know, and if you don't, there's like the top-end fighters, the Conor McGregors of the world, the John Joneses of the world that are making really, really good money. They're on par. Conor's above what a lot of great athletes are, but John Jones is making, you know, on par with like a kind of a mid-level NBA guy. Okay. He's making really good money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Maybe a lower mid-level NBA guy, but he's making really good money, like life-changing, life-altering, generational-type money. And most guys are not anywhere close to that. Your first fight in the UFC right now, $10,000 to show up. If you win, you get another $10,000, right? And you maybe get three or four fights a year at the most. So the PFL tried to make it a merit-based situation, and they're trying to, you know, increase the sort of baseline fighter pay. I'm really proud to be part of that. They shut things down when the whole COVID crisis happened because it's a largely international roster. There's so many logistical nightmares of flying people in from Brazil and Russia and England right now. So they said, we'll come back in 2021. They're paying a stipend to fighters still, allowing people to at least have, you know, money for food and, you know, hopefully get into a gym and train and stuff on their own. So I'm really proud to be part of an organization that's trying to treat fighters the right way, but it's very scary because you don't know if the economics are sustainable.
I ask you this because one of the pro-American sports that has survived or has been, you know, continuing to host events, including coming up this Saturday, are they back in Vegas?
They are. They're back in Vegas.
UFC is coming back.
Yeah.
Or it hasn't gone anywhere, technically. I guess they've already done, what, three events?
They did three events in Florida because right. Florida had deemed
ruthless
performance
anarchy.
Art.
Yeah.
They had decided that WWE events and UFC events could be essential businesses. So
they still didn't have fans in the
right.
stadiums. There wasn't a crowd anywhere. But that's what they're going to do in Vegas again, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to have people watching these events. But it's Vegas. It's some of the big arenas. It's where people want to be, and people want to feel like the fights are coming back. And we know Vegas desperately wants to come back because it's been hit so hard. Is UFC going to emerge from this doing better off? Do they need this to survive? Are they gaining fans right now? What as a fighter, have you gleaned or taken from this?
I think they are gaining fans right now. And whether you think it's controversial or not that they were putting on events when other people deemed it irresponsible, that's kind of Dana White's MO. The president of the UFC is like, I am going to put on events. I am going to push this product forward no matter what. You know, come hell or high water. He's legitimately building the infrastructure on an island, a private island, so he doesn't have to worry about visa issues. He doesn't have to worry about athletic commissions. He's building a place called Fight Island right now, and he's got the money to do it. I think that the UFC took a serious gamble by putting their product back when a lot of people were like, this is not appropriate. But guess what? There were a lot of people saying, this is not appropriate. This is irresponsible. I can't believe they're doing this. And then that Saturday night, they were tweeting about the event.
There was a coronavirus positive test
yeah.
for one of the fighters.
That's right.
And they just pulled him out. And they
pulled him out?
Proceeded forward. And here's the problem. unfortunately, it's going to take some guess and check because, again, you don't know what you don't know. We just – you can't fix problems sometimes until you run into the problems. So having these types of events, whether you love it or not, probably will help in the long term as far as trying to get this thing back on track and giving us a new protocol and giving us a new understanding of what we have to do to get these fights going. So this is coming back. There's been another fight, though, that has been talked about with – I mean, next to Muhammad Ali, the most famous fighter of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson may have eclipsed Muhammad Ali. I mean, in a lot of circles, a lot of, you know, generations like ours were millennials. You know, Mike Tyson was relevant. We saw an older Muhammad Ali whose health was deteriorating. Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield have been offered a fight for $20 million that will go towards charity, though I'm sure Mike will get some of that money, sure. I would imagine. But you actually got to hang out with Mike Tyson for an afternoon. Will you remind me why you were hanging out with Mike Tyson?
So Mike got on board with the PFL,
okay,
to kind of help push forward this product because he's a guy that has been really vocal about the Ali Act and making sure that fighters get compensated, more in boxing, of course, making sure that people get taken care of. And so he's kind of on board with that in MMA as well. And they paid him, of course, but yep, he got on board as part of like a marketing pitch, and I got to go as the play-by-play voice. I got to go hang out with Mike Tyson and watch my fights from season one with Mike Tyson. And we just did like a little social media thing. And he's a complicated individual. He's obviously got a really kind of checkered past. And I'd never thought in my entire life I would see Mike Tyson as a truly sympathetic figure,
yeah,
as a guy that I was like, oh man, I kind of feel sorry for you. I kind of feel sorry for Mike Tyson after spending the whole day with him.
His documentary Tyson is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And that's not sympathizing with Mike Tyson or his horrendous past, but just as far as complicated human beings whose lives have been detailed in front of cameras,
yeah,
for most of his, if not his entire adult life, through all the worst things a human could do and some of the ways you try and redeem yourself. It's fascinating. It's worth watching if you haven't seen it. But what do you make of this with Mike Tyson? Is it something he should do? Are we hurting a guy like Mike Tyson for doing this? Is he capable of making a good decision?
I don't think he is, first of all. And again, I only got to spend one, sure, day with the man. But in that day, I saw him fall asleep on a couch in the middle of a filming segment. I saw him push himself to tears talking about what boxing was about for him and what it had done to him.
He's emotional.
He's a very emotional guy.
Emotional.
You can talk about all the links between CTE and his behavior and whatever. Like, there's a lot of speculation on that. But it's very clear that Mike Tyson is two things to people. He is a cash cow, number one.
Yes.
And he is Iron Mike Tyson, to a lesser extent. They look at him and they see that scary guy with the black shoes and the black shorts and the not flashy and just come out and murder people with a left hook. Like, that's what people expect from Mike Tyson. And he's 53 years old. He's in way better shape than most 53-year-olds, but he wears freaking shape-ups,
yeah,
okay? Because he's got, like, orthotic shoes on because his body's torn to pieces,
right,
from his career, from probably a lot of abuse of other things.
His lifestyle.
He just, I mean, it's a bad deal. If a guy goes on the Joe Rogan podcast recently and he sits down for interviews recently and he sat down with me, and every time he talks about boxing, he talks about how it turned him into an animal and how he doesn't know who he is without it, but he's scared of himself when he is boxing and he's crying. And now we're like, yeah, Mike, let's get you back into a ring. That's not a charitable event.
Right. And I think that's where we have to have this conversation of, it's great to watch Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning go out there and very logically make decisions where even I bet you there was a point where Tiger Woods was like, well, you know what? I still want to play and I have a bad back and, you know, I've had some issues. Do I want to play in the rain? Do I want to risk hurting myself for this? And he went through with it and everything was fine. But I'm sure, honestly, there was a piece of Tiger Woods, the super competitor, who thought, eh, maybe we'll put this off for next week for better weather. Mike Tyson, A, he's not fighting anymore. I get it. He's not going for a career. But we're not doing this for charity anymore. We're doing this for us because we want to see Mike Tyson and the insane fireworks that we're guaranteed to get, good or bad, if we put him back in the ring with Evander Holyfield to get one more fight. To the point where I'm reading this story, someone was trying to organize a fight between him and Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury's the best boxer in the world right now and is in the most violent sport where people could actually die. You don't want a 50-year-old Mike Tyson getting punched by the Gypsy King.
Yeah, and look, I mean, George Foreman, Larry Holmes, these guys fought into their 40s and 50s, and there's precedent for this. And thank goodness that George Foreman had whatever perfect genetic blend and size and whatever else and boxing style that he's still okay. Mike Tyson, everybody, sports fans, human beings, is not okay. He's not okay already. We don't need to see this, all right? Mike Tyson, the boxer, is a bad thing. He's said it. We've seen the results of it. He can't control himself when he's in that mind space. Maybe it's a bipolar thing. Maybe it's a psychotic thing. We don't know what it is, but we do know that it's bad. So the redemptive arc of Mike Tyson, if there is one, has come from him being honest about these things, has come from him doing cameo appearances in funny movies, and now growing legal weed and having a weed farm. Like, that's what Mike Tyson should ride off into the sunset to do. Getting him in there to sustain more head trauma, and by the way, to dish out more head trauma, is not a good thing for Mike Tyson's life.
That's beyond charity. That's exploitative, and that's something we should be careful of as we look at some of these fun events that can occur. It would be fun to watch Mike Tyson fight again. But that might be us paying to watch somebody's life get ruined, and we should be careful of that.
And Deontay Wilder, by the way, who is, in most people's opinion, the second or third best heavyweight in the world right now, Deontay Wilder shamelessly is jumping on board and talking trash and putting out Twitter videos about how Mike Tyson never beat anybody good and come see me in the ring. I believe Deontay Wilder is 32 years old, and Mike Tyson is 53 years old. One of those guys is 6'8", one of those guys is 5'10". It's just, I don't know, man. Like, again, I am not a defender of Mike Tyson's past.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I wanted to sit down for the segment with Mike Tyson because of some of the things I've heard him say and the things we know he got convicted of doing. But having spent time with him 20 years after the fact and seeing how damaged he is as an individual, I don't want to see this again.
When we come back, buy or sell, Sean O'Connell, Ben Anderson, KSL's Unrivaled. KSL's Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Sean O'Connell. Make sure you follow along with the show at KSL Unrivaled. You can find Sean on Twitter at RealOC Sports. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. All right, Sean, we'd like to talk a little bit about buy or sell here. I bring up a couple of sports stories. You tell me whether you're buying them or whether you're selling them really quick. Hey, free online Trading Academy, guys. Let me tell you about it. Register now for a free 3-hour workshop at TradingAcademy.com. It's a free online Trading Academy. Register now for a free 3-hour workshop at TradingAcademy.com. All right. This has long been talked about. Get rid of special teams. This is bad for you. You played some special teams, right?
It's basically all I played, yeah.
NFL proposal. An untimed 4th-and-15 play to replace an onside kick. You like it? You don't like it?
I don't like it. It's a 4th-and-15 play from your own 25-yard line. If it was a 4th-and-2 from your own 25-yard line, there's still not a lot of coaches that would want to take that risk, right? Because you're setting up that field position score. My good friend and a football mentor of mine, even though I never played for him, John Pease, he's got all of these stat sheets about if you got a field that short, the percentages going way, way up. You get the ball back on the 25-yard line going in, you're guaranteed points in the NFL, basically, with those kickers. So I don't necessarily love this rule. I also know this rule came from the AAF, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think there was ever a successful conversion on it. So I get it. Look for some novel things, maybe change it up, try and eliminate some of those big collisions if you actually pretend to care about player safety. But I don't know. The onside kick rules have been changed enough for me. I still want the onside kicks.
I'm going to stay with the onside kick as well, but let's make it wackier. Let's make it – how about this?
The mascot has to recover.
There's one kicker. That's the only guy who's kicking the ball off. Nobody else on his team. If he makes a tackle, if he can officially stop the down, they get 7 points.
He's the only one out there?
Yeah, it's 1-on-11. He kicks the ball.
There's no way.
But if he can stop the play, 7 points automatically.
How about this? I like your one kicker idea, but how about this? The only people out there are the kicker who's kicking the onside kick and the punter from the other team, and you kick it and you have to recover it yourself. And the only person for the receiving team who can try to recover is their punter. So you've got this kicker on punter crime every onside kick attempt. What do you think?
Two footballs. always been a fan of whatever the play is. Give me two footballs.
Give me two.
All right. Tom Brady selling his custom Escalade. He wants to sell it for $300,000. First of all, are you offended when mega rich people sell things for too much money? Like $300,000 for Tom Brady's
car? I'm offended
Brady's
when mega
car.
Rich people sell things, period.
Period.
All right? Here's the thing. If you're mega rich, not like kind of rich, if you're mega rich, you're entitled to buy yourself these fancy, nice things, but when you're done with them, you should give them away. All right? Tom Brady, do the right thing, have a raffle, and give this to one of your adoring fans. Or to someone who hates you. I don't care.
This car, it's a 2018 stretched Cadillac Escalade. So it's undrivable because it's a stretch Escalade. You can only take kids to prom in it. How about this? It only has a 32-inch television. I'm offended that you're selling a car for $300,000 that has like the low-end TV in it. It has 20-inch rims. So, Liam, at least you got 20s.
Okay,
you're rolling
cool.
on 20s. You got to have
Are
that.
Are they spinners at least?
No. And why did spinners go away?
I don't know.
Let me ask you this. Buy or sell spinners?
Buy spinners.
Huge buy.
And why?
Easy buy.
Why don't we have the and one shoes anymore that had the spinner wheels in the shoes? Why'd those go away?
You're not buying it. The vehicle was $350,000 brand new, so he's taking a bath on this thing one way or another.
Tom, do the right thing and give this away in a contest.
You know, he did the All-In Challenge, which you could get his... The All-In Challenge, what they do is you can go and you auction off sporting events or jerseys online. He's offering, I think it's dinner with him the night before his first game with Tampa Bay. His first jersey, and I think his cleats. It raised like $500,000.
I think it was $800,000.
Yeah, it's like insane amounts of money, and he's trying to recoup some of that now.
And you know who bought it? You know who, like, bid on that? They already auctioned it off?
Yeah, it's done.
It's like a YouTube star. Some weird, like, 21-year-old mega millionaire.
He's going to parlay that until 45 million hits and make his money back.
That's right.
The money's all staying
genius.
At the
that
top.
Kid.
The money's all staying at the
it's
top.
He's like 22. Show. He's a genius.
All right. Antonio Brown, buy or sell? He plays in the NFL next year.
Sell.
I'm with you. He's kind of in that Mike Tyson stage. Like, maybe it's better for him if he's not around football. It might be better for his life if he's not around football.
Well, the thing with him is there's a self-awareness of that fact. He's talked about it. People around him have kind of talked about, like, hey, man, they don't care about me here. I'm messed up here, whatever. But now he wants to play again? Like, you can't have your cake and eat it, too. You either want us to be sympathetic of the fact that the NFL spit you up and or chewed you up and spit you out, or you want to play in the NFL. You can't have it both ways, Antonio.
Dwayne Haskins working out with him. If I'm a coach in Washington, I'm saying, what are you doing? Get away from him. We're not going to sign Antonio Brown. Stop hanging out with Antonio Brown. I'm selling. I think his career is over. I think he had a chance with the Patriots. They had a serial killer in their locker room, and they made it work. They couldn't make it work with Antonio Brown. How is he going to come back anywhere else?
Yeah, but you know what? Talent, man. Guys like Josh Gordon have never worked out anywhere, and people keep giving him. He's on, like, his 15th chance. Alden Smith is on his 8th chance in Dallas this year. 8th!
Pac-Man. I think Pac-Man still plays, right?
Yeah, Pac-Man's still around.
Buy or sell. The NFL buying the XFL and making it a minor league system. Apparently, the now defunct or recently defunct XFL, which came and went as fast as any sporting league I've ever seen.
Thanks to COVID.
Thanks to COVID, sure. Yeah, I'm not saying they did it to themselves. They had a major
not
issue.
Self-inflicted.
But they didn't save money to come back next season. They're done. It's over, at least from the previous owners. Do you buy, someone's going to buy it and bring it back, specifically the NFL, to make a minor league system?
I'm selling that the NFL is going to buy it, but you know who is going to buy it? Vince McMahon.
Okay. You think it comes back?
Created a shell company.
Yeah.
That is now bankrupt. They're selling it off on pennies on the dollar. He is going to buy the XFL back. And he's going to launch it again somewhere down the line.
Probably already claim some of the insurance money as well.
Guaranteed. Like, he's an evil genius.
That's going to do it for Buy or Sell Free Online Trading Academy. Register now for a free 3-hour workshop at tradingacademy.com. That's the tradingacademy.com. All right. Really quick, Sean. I'm going to bring up the top 100 NFL players list. I wanted to get to this earlier in the show. I didn't have a chance to get to it. I'm going to ask, who's the top player right now in the NFL you're starting a franchise?
Pat Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes comes in at number one. Who's number two? Again, this is always controversial. He's always at the top of these lists. I don't know if you could start a franchise with him.
They put Aaron Rodgers there, probably?
Aaron Donald.
Oh, Aaron Donald?
Aaron. I don't know if I'm... I love Aaron Donald. You got to have a good pass rush in the NFL, especially if you're going up against the likes
great
of
great interior
Patrick
pass
Mahomes.
Rusher, yeah.
But are you going to start with Aaron Donald?
No, you're not going to start with a defensive lineman, period. The top 10, if you're talking about, if that's the question, who are you starting a franchise with? The top 10 are the best 10 quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
No matter how old they are.
You do a fantasy draft, Tom Brady's still going in the top 8.
Yes.
Easily still going in the top
8. You go the young guys first, right? The young great ones first, and then you run out of those, and then you go Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and the guys that only have a couple years left, but you only want to win for 2 or 3 years in the NFL. You don't really build Belichick dynasties in the NFL.
Okay, here's your top 10. Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Donald, Russell Wilson comes in at number 3. Michael Thomas, the wide receiver out of New Orleans, 4. Christian McCaffrey, 5. Stephon Gilmore at 6. Are you taking a cornerback in the top 10?
You're not taking a receiver either.
Lamar Jackson, Chandler Jones, Khalil Mack, and Aaron Rodgers. Hey, huge thanks to Sean O'Connell filling in today with me for Alex and Scott. Big thanks to Amber running the board for us today. Be back with more KSL's Unrivaled coming up tomorrow. Stick around.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.